Oh God, please no.
Please. Here we are again on Card Knock Live episode 13. It's me, Corey Murphy, here with your other host, Daryl Feltner.
What up?
Oh. And Brandon will not be joining us tonight, and John will not be joining us tonight. Ryan said he'd be here, so we'll see if he shows up later on. Stay posted.
I think you're just going to have to drop the Will Smith track at the beginning now from now on. It's just the two of us.
Yeah. If Ryan comes on, we'll have to find something with the based around the number three then. I don't know. Can you think of something?
I mean, you could always play the intro song to the Three Amigos movie.
There you go.
Or the Three Musketeers.
The Three Musketeers. Is that one, like, do you know how that goes?
No, I don't.
Okay. It must not have been a very notable soundtrack.
No, probably not.
Oh, hey, Daryl, I've had this in the show notes for a long time. I'm actually going to start with this today.
Okay.
Okay. So this is actually our introduction. Hi, I'm Corey, and I think that the worst card in Magic, and you get to say this to yourself too, Daryl.
Oh,
is
good.
Scornful Egotist. You know what that does?
I do. It's a morph that pays blue to unmorph. It's an 8-mana 1/1. Card's not actually bad.
It is a 7 in blue for a 1/1 with no abilities, except for morph, and it can flip for 1 blue.
So, you actually played that card in draft a ton in Onslaught Draft, because you would draft the card Rush of Knowledge. Do you know what that one is?
Yeah, draw a card for each converted mana cost, or highest converted mana cost, or something.
Correct.
Like that.
So you would morph this guy, and you would play a 6-mana Rush of Knowledge and draw 8 cards. And that was the strategy the blue decks had, because then you would just bury them in your, like, really crappy draft creatures.
So that was kind of a mechanic that was going on at the time, wasn't it? So very particular to the metagame.
Yeah, very particular to the draft. It was not actually a thing that happened in Standard ever.
Oh,
but
too bad. I'm sure someone tried it.
Very particular to draft.
So, Rush of Knowledge is not a bad card. It's 5 mana.
No, not at all.
I've got 2 more for you, though.
All right.
Bog Hoodlums.
All right, you got me on this one. I got nothing.
Bog Hoodlums is 5 in black for a 4/1 that can't block. And when it comes into play, you clash with an opponent, and if you win, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. That makes it a 5/2 that can't block.
Horrible,
it's pretty
but
bad.
It's not.
Pretty bad.
I mean,
this comes from the era of goblins are like they're overcosted just because they're goblins.
I don't know. I have to think of some really bad cards. So if you got another one, go ahead. I mean, I got one in mind as a joke, but
all right, I got one more.
Okay.
The worst card in Magic. Hang on, let me pull this one up because I don't even know what it does. The third worst card in Magic is Great Wall from the Legend set. It's not even a wall. It's an enchantment. And it says, creatures with planeswalk may be blocked as if they did not have this ability. I might say that's the worst card in Magic, actually.
It's very flavorful.
It's very flavorful. It was very confusing when planeswalking, P-L-A-N-E-S, walking became a thing in Magic, and then we already had planeswalk, P-L-A-I-N-S,
walk. Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't understand I didn't understand what Urza's big deal was if he had planeswalk. I was like, that's not that great of an ability anyway. No one plays white.
Okay.
Daryl, what's your worst card in Magic?
Basic Mountain. Easy.
Oh my god.
Okay, Basic Mountain. Stormcrow, pretty bad.
Stormcrow, it's got some upside. 2/1, 2 flyer, right?
Yeah, that card,
I'd draft that. I'd draft that now. If it was in Origins, which it should have been, I'd draft it.
Oh, God, please, just stop.
I'm serious.
Third card, the honorable mention for worst card in Magic, because have you ever actually seen a copy of this card? Chains of Mephistopheles.
Oh, boy. Can you talk about this?
Oh, yeah, let me... I can't tell you... hold on. So, if a player... I can tell you off the top of my head, because I've read the actual card, which is an atrocity... if a player would draw a card outside of the first card they draw in their draw phase, they have to discard a card. If they do not discard a card, they put the top card of their library into their graveyard.
Uh-huh.
If they discard a card, they go ahead and draw a card. It's just like the actual... I'll pull the actual gather for it so that it's not as wordy as that.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at the original copy of Chains of Mephistopheles... it says, if a player would draw a card, except for the first one he or she draws in their draw step, that player discards a card instead. If the player discards a card this way, they draw a card. If they do not, They put the top card of their library in the graveyard. So nice. The way the actual card reads is the problem, because it's like completely ununderstandable if you've never seen the Oracle.
Yeah.
It says, every time a player draws a card, that player must first discard a card from his or her hand. If there are no cards in his or her hand, take the top card from their library and place it in the graveyard instead of drawing. This enchantment does not apply to the first card drawn by a player during the draw phase.
Yeah, that's a mouthful, I'd say.
Absolutely awful.
Combo with Obstinate Familiar. One red for a 1/1. If you draw a card, you may skip that draw instead. That's a lock right there.
Sad, dude, that's the best. The literal best.
You ever, hey, we're getting on a tangent here, but I like it. We're going to go with it. You ever play Scribble Ante where you, you ante up a card?
I have played Scribble Ante.
Okay, first of all, another tangent. That's, like, the best way to play five colors so that you don't play, like, all your power cards in there because then you don't want them to get drawn on. Makes for a really fun 250-card five-player.
I may have had a Demonic Tutor and a dual land drawn playing Scribble Ante.
Yeah, 10 bucks.
So,
not the dual land.
Not the dual land. Demonic Tutor, not 10 bucks, by the way.
Is it? Is it up there?
Yeah, it's much higher than 10 bucks.
There's the reprint in... Alright, whatever.
It costs even more.
Alright, anyways, what you do, my favorite thing to do in Scribble Ante is to cross out some words on the card so that they're really bad. Like, for example, my favorite one is Kodama's Reach, which says, search your library for up to two basic land cards, reveal those cards, put one into play tapped and the other into your hand, then shuffle your library.
Sure.
You can cross it out so it says, search your library for two cards, reveal those cards, then shuffle your library.
Oh, double demonic tutor, eh?
No, you don't get to put them in your hand. You just reveal them, and then you shuffle them back into your library. For three mana, sorcerer speed.
Sick. So, okay.
Just an example. See what you can come up with. Go look at your cards tonight.
Old beat up card demonic tutors, $12 from Unlimited and Revised. The demonic tutor you were speaking of, that was the reprint.
Yeah.
Both of them, $20.
On
TCG Mint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I knew that card was going to be worth some money, and that came out of the Dual Decks. Oh, Dual Decks Anthology. Also, Dual Decks Demine versus Demonic.
Well done. Demonic. Wow. If you're not on Gather, well done. Like, wow.
Oh, no. I'm on TCG Player.
Okay. You cheated as well. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. But yeah,
so
that's
you could, so you, could, you can modify that one to say, search your library for a card, then shuffle your library.
Yeah. But yeah, the Chains of Mephistopheles, the Stone Cold Lock for the worst card. Not because it's a bad card, but because it's completely unintelligible, like, the first three times you read it. And then, like, you maybe think you understand it, and then you cast Brainstorm, and you get destroyed.
All right, we're going to have a competition. Please write in to cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com and tell me what the worst card in Magic is and explain why it is officially the worst card in Magic. And we'll send you 15 copies of Chains of Mephistopheles.
Not even close. That card's really expensive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like $300 a piece.
All right, we'll put those on Brandon.
I will mail them a foil Dragon Throne of Tarkir.
All right, there you go. Dragon Throne of Tarkir. Daryl will mail you a foil Dragon Throne of Tarkir.
Yeah, Chains of Mephistopheles, TCG low, $330. Not mailing someone 15 of those. No, thank you.
All right, let's start now. Daryl stuff.
All right, so I went to Richmond this past weekend, where Star City was at. I went for the TCG, or for the 5K, sorry. I don't know why I was calling TCG 5K. For the Premier 5K, the Legacy Open, or basically. And I had just the worst weekend in the history of ever.
Oh.
So, I drove to Richmond. It's like 3 hours. Not bad. Took me 6.5.
Okay.
There were accidents everywhere. So, there was an accident on the interstate to Richmond. So, it was an hour wait. So, I got off and got on the detour. And there was an accident on the detour. 45-minute wait. So, I got on another detour. And there was an accident on that detour. So, I had to take a fourth detour.
Uh-huh.
So, on the fourth detour, I got pulled over doing 10 over. And the cop only gave me a seatbelt ticket. Good guy. He said, I don't want to give you the $150 speeding ticket because you would have to get arrested because your driver's license isn't a Maryland driver's license. Okay. It's a Wisconsin driver's license.
That doesn't sound bad. That sounds good.
Yeah. So Wisconsin and Virginia apparently have a trade agreement that if you get pulled over and for speeding,
yeah,
you have to be arrested, taken to the magistrate's office, and then, like, held overnight in jail and then released.
That would have been worse than going to the GP.
That would have been stone awful. So he decided, I don't want to deal with that. You don't want to deal with it either. Have a seatbelt ticket. So I go, I open up 3-0, and then I 0-3 by getting crushed by Omnitel 3 times.
Oh, my God. Is that your worst matchup? What were you playing?
No, I was playing Miracles. It's a fine matchup, but just like, I had 4 counter spells in every game, too, with an Aethersaur Canis to play.
Yeah.
And my opponent beat me. He just bounced my Canis and then went off with just infinite counter spells. It's like, all right. You can't beat that. And so, Dig Your Time is insane in that deck.
I'm not a big Legacy player here or at all.
Can you tell me why
Aethersaur Canis shuts down Omnitel?
It doesn't shut down Omnitel, it just slows them down a lot.
Okay.
So, for those of you who don't know what Aethersaur Canis does, 1W, 2/2 human cleric artifact. Each player can only play 1 non-artifact spell during each turn. So, the Omnitel deck will cast Show and Tell, and will put an Omniscience in the play. And then on that turn, they try to cast Cunning Wish, go get Elaborate's Call, cast Emrakul, take an extra turn, attack you, or cast Cunning Wish, go get release the ants and have a 10 or 15 converted mana cost card on top of their deck and cover you in ants until you are dead. That requires them to cast more than one spell in a turn.
Okay.
So because of that, they put Omniscience into play and they say go. And then you get a turn and you say go. And then they do like Cunning Wish at the end of your turn and they get a Latimer's Call. And so they cast the Latimer's Call and say go. And then you get a turn and then they like play Dictogon. And then they take a turn, cast Emrakul, take an extra turn, attack you, cast a spell. So theoretically, in the Emrakul turn, your Aethersaur Canis is dead or you are dead. But, yeah, so it takes them multiple turns instead of one to kill you. So it's pretty good against them. But yeah, I couldn't fight through the Boseiju with double Red Blast to try and kill Omniscience. So that happened 3 times, and I got eliminated from the tournament. And it was a 75-person tournament. It was like oversized F&M.
Oh, my God.
It's like, yeah, it's like you show up, and it's just like, everybody's here, and it's an F&M, and everyone's just BSing, and it's not like somebody's trying to win, like, $1,500. Just like, doesn't matter. It's an F&M. We're just playing Magic.
75 players, 74 of them were playing Omnitel.
No, 74 of them were not playing Omnitel. I got to play Death of Texas twice.
Oh, okay, times. Good.
I played a mainboard Karanos and killed a Death of Texas player for 39, so that was nice.
Oh, that's the deck that I would I'd be building if I always say that, but I like Death and Texas. I think that'd be a fun deck.
Yeah, so God crushed an oversized F&M and then drove home.
Yeah, good.
On my way home, got in a car accident.
Oh, God.
Yeah, tried to turn across the highway, didn't see couldn't see past the line of semis, got broadsided by a van, so. But was told I was at fault because I was turning left at it from a stop sign. So,
you're automatically at fault if you're turning left at a stop sign?
Yeah, that's apparently what happened. So,
okay.
Apparently the state of Virginia get wrecked. So, and my car's probably totaled because it's an old piece of crap. So the damages will cost more than it would to like buy the car. So my car's totaled. I'll probably have to get a new car.
Wow. All right. That sucks.
Yeah. So, oversized F&M 5K was a great failure, but I had a good time.
Sorry,
when I wasn't having a bad time in my car.
So, are you looking into a new car at this point, or is this something you're putting on hold? Can you get to work without it?
I can get to work with it. The car's driving.
Oh, what's it?
Yeah, the front end's all jacked up. It's busted out, and the headlight's busted out. But I can drive for it, so it's not like I can't get to work. So, but eventually there will be a new car, I assume. I probably will have to go that way.
Yeah.
But it just depends on what the laws in the state are. If the laws are, I can get my car back, and I'll just drive the car until it doesn't drive anymore.
You lease a Passat for $199 a month.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you see that commercial?
Could you imagine a guy my size in a Passat?
Because that's a big car.
I'm a big man. I'm a very big man.
Yeah, but it's not like a little sports car. A Passat's big.
Is it? I've never seen a Passat before, so...
I mean, it's like a mid-sized sedan, you know? It's not like...
Okay, that's not bad, then. I thought you were trying to shoehorn me into, like, a tiny car.
Like a Mazda Miata?
Not a chance. No, absolutely not.
No, I'm all about big cars. I drive a Scion. It's a car. It's a big car. So it's got, like, you know, lots of room. I can fit a bike in the back of it with no problem.
Yeah. I think about buying a van, a minivan, in all honesty, but whatever. Enough car talk, more magic talk. All
right. Magic talk.
In the main event, which
was... It's not car knock life, Daryl.
No, in fact, our car is on top of a bunch of magic cards. So let's talk about magic cards. All right.
Go for it.
In the main event, I just got to defer the main event while I was getting crushed in Legacy. You know, everyone's seen the standings and all that fun jazz. A couple things that kind of stood out is Rally of the Ancestors just like the deck? Like, is it just the best deck in the format?
Are we talking about standard now?
Yeah, absolutely.
I say
like,
no.
Is that, I mean, it's been playing out like it's the best deck in the format.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I was surprised to see it win because when a deck like that places in the, on a Star Cities event, like, a lot of people want to build it when it's juicy and fun like that one is, and then, like, it doesn't do anything the next week, and then people, like, forget about it, typically. You know what I'm saying? Like, that Chromantiflare deck, when that happened at the Pro Tour. Like, yeah, obviously, bad timing, because it did just show up last weekend, but, that was a deck that everyone was like, oh, man, we're gonna get all our Chromanticores right now, and Chromanticore shot up to, like, 350 or something that week, and then it didn't show up for, like, 3-4 weeks after, and then when it does, it's, like, 32nd place or something.
Yeah, so. And so, like, I just look at this deck, and it just looks like a super grindy, like, little guy Abzan deck. Just, like, little creatures trying to get in the red zone. And then, like, if you try and slow it down a little bit, it just combo kills you. Because, like, the curve of just, like, Mystic and the Deathmist Raptor into, like, Magosi's Marauders? I don't know. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to curve into with this deck. Like, but it just looks like... Yeah, like, that seems real bad, though, because you only have one devotion, so you're, like, attacking for three.
I don't think this deck, like, really plays the whole curve game. I think it just, like, runs
just,
out guys and, like, kind of hangs on for dear life until
it
can resolve
you.
A rally.
Yeah, it overwhelms you with creatures, and then if you clear the board, it casts Rally and overwhelms you with creatures.
Yeah, overwhelms you with a Nantuqua Husk that's coming in with haste.
Yeah.
I think I like this deck... This version of it better than the one in Chicago. The one in Chicago had blue, didn't it? It had like Jason.
It had blue and red. It was splashing red on the sideboard for Jamoke Span. I think I think Jace is insane in this deck. Like flipping that guy and then targeting Rally and then like flashing back Rally. Absolutely great. I think it fits in the deck. It's just really hard to like consider the splash worthy.
Yeah, but
when you're just playing Jace.
The Jace one does not have Collected Company, though.
Correct.
And it's only got two... Oh, it's got Court of Calling, though. So it doesn't have Collected Company. It's got Gather the Pack, which I think is not so good.
So he was just trying to all in. He was just trying to, like, this is my combo.
Okay.
And I'm doing it. Instead of, like, trying to play this value game that Ray Toxic was playing.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's deck can get by without it because he's got four Lilianas in the deck, and that's another engine in itself. Just flipping that Liliana, you can reanimate anything in the yard.
Okay, so I thought this card was super broken at first because I looked at this deck, and, like, I hadn't actually read the backside of Liliana, Critical Healer, and I just had, like, typeset it in my mind, and I was like, this card's just broken because you can -3 Liliana and target Liliana and bring back Liliana. And just make a massive army of 2/2 zombies with your Nantuqua Husk. Not a thing you can do. It says non-legendary.
Well, I don't know if that's your plan. I mean,
well, no, I just thought it was
Liliana to hit a Fleshbag Marauder seems pretty utility.
I just thought it was a combo that you could do. Like when you rallied, you could -3 Liliana, bring back Liliana, sack a creature, get a zombie, flip it, -3 Liliana, bring back Liliana, and like keep doing that and fill the board with zombies. I had not actually read the card before, so I was like, this deck's just got to be, like, the most broken thing in the world, because you can just make infinite zombies and move on with your day, or, like, 10 or 15 zombies,
and how
does your opponent ever beat that? But then I read the backside of the card and realized that I was an idiot. But this deck, like, is it time for people to start packing Graveyard Hate? Like, is it time to,
and
like...
Afenza? I think
this guy's playing 3 and Afenza. Is it time for, like... Anafenza and Agent of Erebos and Tormod's Crypt to start making their appearances. Maybe even the beguiled, I believe it's Hallowed Moonlight, the new card that exiles all creatures that are coming into a graveyard or into play from Not Your Hand.
Yeah, actually, that's the best one. That is actually really good right now.
Yeah, because that's like instant speed Tormod's Crypt with a cantrip, and that seems like the best one. And you can play it in pretty much everything but the green red ramp decks, and which are just like hoping to go faster than Abzan Rally.
Right.
And the blue black control decks, which have Agent of Erebos, so they can Tormod's Crypt them. Well, so, I mean, and then like green back black Constellation, but they have Agent of Erebos. So every time they Constellation.
90% of the decks are in white right now. So just about anything can run Hallowed Moonlight. But what else does it hit, though? It hits, you know, like it can null Hordling Outburst, right?
It nullifies Hordling Outburst. It nullifies Deafness Raptor just coming out of the graveyard.
Right? It gets the Wingmate Rock token. It gets Whip creatures.
Yeah, I mean, Whip is kind of on a downswing, but it hits all of your collected company creatures, so you just choose not to put creatures in.
Right. Yeah.
So it's extremely good. It's effectively two-mana counter-target collected company cycle.
Yes.
Which is an insane rate, considering Rand is two-mana counter-target collected company, put it in their hand, draw a card, and it just says that collected company does nothing. It also is a counter for Quarter Calling. So, I mean, it's a really reasonable card that if you want some instant speed interaction and you're expecting your opponent to do something like Quarter Calling, Rally, Collected Company, you know, the Deathmiss Raptor package, and you don't want to deal with Deathmiss Raptor. So Deathmiss Raptor is a May ability, so you can't actually snare Deathmiss Raptor out of the graveyard. But, like, the other spells, like, you essentially counter them. So it's actually great.
Hallowed Moonlight, while we're on the topic, seems like it would be a good side card in Modern as well, and I'm not seeing it much yet. But think about what it hits in Modern, like Splinter Twin combo, right? Reanimator,
yeah,
hits the Court of Calling in the Collected
the
Company
Kiki pod decks.
Decks.
Yeah,
well, the Malira pod decks
hits Collected Company itself. Yeah, it shuts off like the front end of Lingering Souls. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to cycle... you're not going to put this in for Lingering Souls, are you?
Right. No, you're not going to put it in for Lingering Souls, but, like, if there's something else, and then they go, like, Lingering Souls, and you don't have a good answer, yeah, all right, I'll cycle this and counter the front end of your Lingering Souls and then figure out what to do on the back end.
But, hey, Daryl, if they do the... if they do the Reanimator deck and they get Emrakul back, like, in response to the trigger when he hits the yard...
Yeah.
And then you Hallowed Moonlight it...
Yep.
It does not enter the battlefield, so they don't get the extra turn, right?
So you don't get the extra turn off Emrakul when it enters the battlefield anyways, because it's not cast.
Okay.
You could, like, Show and Tell just puts Emrakul to play. It has to be cast, which is why Omniscience, like, plays Emrakul, because Omniscience, you can cast it for free, play it, get the extra turn, untap, attack with it. So on the Glorious Vengeance deck, they just play Emrakul because it annihilates your board because Glorious Vengeance gives it haste. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that seems good. I mean, that's probably
So Hallowed Moonlight has some fringe applications in Modern. If there's like a deck that wants to accelerate through its deck, it's playing white. It's like a blue white X deck. You might see like an Esper Delver deck play. This is a one of just to like have another floodgate for, you know, Splinter Twin and things like that. Or to be able to fend off their opponent's Lingering Souls and get an advantage in the Lingering Souls battles and things like that. But no, I can see that card showing up at Standard. So, I mean, there's kind of three big options, and I think Tormod's Crypt is Standard legal. Is that a thing? So,
yeah, I believe so.
Okay. And so the Green Red Ramp deck can play Tormod's Crypt, but is it time to, like, dust off your graveyard hate and go to town with it? Or are we just kind of letting this deck be basically the dredge of Standard that, like, you just hope not to get paired against dredge because you didn't put any sideboard hate in for dredge.
Yeah,
and
right.
if you get paired against dredge, you lose. Like,
yep.
So, I mean, I don't know what... I don't know where this deck kind of sits. It's just a really powerful engine. And I think there's going to be a lot more innovation with it. But I don't know what... You know, how are people going to prepare for this going forward? It's kind of interesting.
I think that, like, there are lots of, there are lots of hate cards out in format right now.
Yeah, there are.
I think we're not using them, you know?
Yeah, this deck also has a lot of moving parts. So, you know, they draw the wrong part of the moving parts, then they're in trouble, things like that.
All right. Hey, never mind, I'll save it. I got something to say about Jace while we're
Jace?
On the topic. Are we on the topic of Jace? I don't know.
We just kind of glanced by Jace and then walked away.
All right. Well, let me just quickly note that the card is $40 in Star City Games now.
Not shocked.
Continuing to rise. I don't think any of those planeswalkers are going to hold the rate that they are right now. I mean, like Elspeth at the height of its play was $25.
Yeah.
Maybe even $30 at some point, but down to like $5 right now.
I mean, to be fair, Elspeth did get a couple reprints and it's rotating on standard.
Yeah. Well.
So I'm going to continue kind of forge onward with just the standard opening general.
Okay.
Something really cool. I don't know if you paid attention to got this. I know you got married this weekend, so you certainly didn't pay. You did get married this weekend? Okay, did I imagine that you sold your soul?
I really did.
You bet someone half your stuff that you'll love them forever. That was the worst bet you could ever make. Just a neat thing, and this is where I wish we had John, so we could break down this Monterey aggro deck that got sixth place. You know, I'm going to be a little controversial. This is a female, everyone, that played this Monterey aggro deck in sixth place. Don't be stunned. Don't be shocked. Women play Magic. It's a miracle. Holy crap. but no, I mean, it's nice to see sort of the evolution of, you know, women starting to penetrate the top eights in these tournaments and, like, also, like, showing that even though it's a male-dominated game, you know, and this is trying to be as politically correct as possible, even though it's a male-dominated game, like, their competitors just the same as us.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because everyone's like, why don't girls play Magic? Well, they do. They do this. Deal with it. They're good at
anyways,
it.
Anyways, Joe, get to your point.
It's Monterey aggro deck. It's just Monterey aggro. Just wanted to bring up, you know, this. I think this is one of the first female top eights. Like Jackie Lee and Feline. I know Feline won a Star City, but like, you know, just keep your eye out for those. Those are few and far between. I think it's just cool to kind of point out. Just standard Monterey aggro. A couple of Chandras, which I, you know, some people weren't high on. She kind of sided with us though. On the Abbot of Care of, what is it, Carekeep or Abbot of whatever?
Abbot of Carekeep.
As a Carekeep, okay.
Yeah,
she sided with us on the Abbot of Carekeep as garbage and played zero of those.
Yeah.
So, if, you know,
still,
this is
still
the best
no one subscribing to Scab Clan Berserker.
No we'll subscriptions to Scab Clan Berserker. She subscribed to Flip Chandra instead. She was in the market for Flip Chandra.
Yeah, that card's bad. Come on.
I don't know. What does the backside do? I don't even know what the backside
does.
Doesn't
even matter. It's so hard to flip it.
Not really. You just attack and then play a spell.
Yeah, it has to deal damage to a player, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, you attack and they don't block it, and you play a spell and then ping them.
Alright.
The backside of this card is not good.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, not
it's
good.
It's just a bad card. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the backside not good. All right, so even though she did not subscribe to your Scab Clan Berserker plan, I disagree with Chandra because that card's not great.
That's the problem. Is like the argument against Scab Clan Berserker is you can't get in with the 2/2 on turn 3, but it's one turn faster than Chandra, and it has the same requirement. You know, it has to deal the damage. Unless
right,
you're actually going to be playing two red spells on your next turn, and hoping
you say Chandra can ping, 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 flip. But,
yeah,
like, Scab Clan Berserker just is, like, this accidental Pyre Static killer, whereas Chandra is, like, an active card advantage engine, so that's why people, I think, are liking that other than that guy, and think both of them are bad, and that Abbot of Carekeep is just insane.
Well, we've seen that it's not, because it would be dominating standard right now.
Certainly.
The red deck has all the tools it needs to be good, and no one's run it. Or it's just not successful because there are too many Rhinos.
Yeah, too much bigness. Oh, and then the last two decks were of interest to me, and then I'm done, you know, it's whipping boing standard into the ground, and you can take over and, you know, let me know if I missed something.
All right, let's hear about
them. The green-red combo deck, essentially, air quotes.
The green-red ramp?
Yeah, Green Red Ramp. It's essentially supposed to be a combo deck.
Okay.
So what it's trying to do is play a Ferocious See the Unwritten and kill its opponent. Because if you Ferocious See the Unwritten and put a Tarka World Render and Xenagos the Reveler, or Xenagos the God with Xenagos God of Revels into play at the same time,
yeah.
You 24 your opponent, because it's 6 flying, haste, that's doubled up by Xenagos,
oh
and then
God.
When a Tarka
yeah.
attacks, all the dragons you control get double strike. So, 24.
Yep,
so, yeah, there he's
trample.
Trying to trample a trample? Is it trample?
Yeah, it's got trample.
No, not the Dragon Lord. It's the World Under Trample. Oh, yeah,
it does.
How about that? Neat. But,
Dragon Lord
does
not.
No, Dragon Lord of Tarka has trample.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does. I'm looking at the card.
Oh, it does. You're right. Okay, sorry.
Deal with it, bro. But, yeah, 4 Thunder Breaks, 3 Atarka World Render, a Dragon Lord Atarka, and then he's got, you know, a little bit of the monstrous or ferocious enablers, Sirok the Dragon Claw, or Sirok the Hunt Caller, Yasova Dragon Claw, which that one's a sweet one to see some play. That one is, for those of you who don't know, that's a 2 and a green for a 4/2 trampler. At the beginning of combat, you can pay 1 and then blue-red hybrid, so 1 red in this deck. If you do, gain control of the target creature and opponent controls a power less than Yasova Dragon Claw until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. So
yeah.
It's basically 3 mana threatens on your attack step, so you can take their Rabble Master or their Siege Rhino. Can you take a Siege Rhino? Nope, it has to be power less. Boo.
You can...
Coursers, you know, Fleecebane Lions, Death Dealers. You know, you can just move a blocker out of the way and attack with another guy. So it actually just provides me utility in this ranked deck, so it kind of gives you, like, another angle to go off of.
Yeah.
But the big combo is Atarka plus Xenagod trying to 24 your opponent, which is adorable, and sometimes you just do it, and they're dead.
The Yasova can take a Siege Rhino if you've also got Xenagos, God of Revels out, and you double its power.
It can't, because you have to target before Xenagos resolves.
Really? Both of them are being in combat.
Yeah, but both of them make you declare a target.
Oh, right, okay.
So, Yasova's target is not a legal target.
Okay, legit. Also,
yeah.
Heads up, if you Yasova a Planeswalker, one of the baby Planeswalkers, and then you have it flipped, all of them say return to play under its owner's control. So, like, if you flip a Jace, because it gets haste when you
get it.
It becomes theirs, yeah. Okay. Anyways, this to me looks like, if you look through the cards, it looks like, you know, very much like my first constructed deck. Like, you know, when you, like, first build the deck, and you're like,
well,
I like big creatures that cost a lot of mana and green ones, and like all these kind of like silly like
baby's first constructed deck.
Yeah, but you know when it's, I mean, obviously like it's powerful, like it has like explosive potential with the 4 Seed of the Unwritten's in there. But oh my god, I don't know. About this
so, by the way, if you haven't read or played against Gaia's Revenge, that card is an absolute beating.
Yeah.
But it does die to Sultai Charm.
It dies to a lot. It's only got 5 toughness, and it does not have trample.
That's
an issue.
See,
what it should be is protection from, like, non-green or something so that it can't be blocked. Obviously, that would be, like, insanely good, but I don't think that this is really...
It can't be the target of non-green, which is pretty good, but, you know, Ultimate Prize, Downfall, you know, all the white removal can't kill it, Abzan Charm can kill it, so, you know, there are some things that can kill it.
Also, you just chomp block it for days.
That you can do, too. But, wait a minute, does this card give it trample? No, boo. Doesn't give it trample. Just gives it haste. I was going to say, but Xenagod gives it trample, which is absolute beating, but that's not true either. So.
No, it does not.
Let's pretend I didn't think that.
Unfortunately.
And then the last sweet one. This one was just a sweet one. This one, it top 8-ed, but like, I don't know how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was good enough that weekend. The Abzan Constellation deck.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that haven't seen this deck, it's I'll run it down. 4 Herald of the Pantheon, which is the 2 mana guy from Origins. Enchantments cost 1 less. Whenever you play an enchantment, gain a life. 4 Caryatid, 4 Courser, 4 Doomwake Giant, 4 Eidolon of Blossoms, 4 Nyx Weaver, a Farika God of Affliction, some combination of lands in various varieties, 23 of them. Banishing Light, 4 of them, 2 Sigil of the Empty Throne, two Starfield in Ix, four Crucifixes Insight, and then an Interest Insight board that we'll get to here in a second. Sigil of the Empty Throne is whenever you play enchantment, get a 4/4 for 5 mana. Starfield in Ix is the new Opalescence that also revives an enchantment from your graveyard if you have 5 or more enchantments. Wait.
No.
Oh, no, it's the other way around. It's Opalescence if you have 5 or more enchantments, and then every turn you get back an enchantment.
Which you always have 5 or more enchantments. Every card in this deck is an enchantment, except for Sylvan Paradin.
Except for the lands.
Yeah,
and the lands.
No, they did not make enchantment lands like they made artifact lands, unfortunately.
No, that would have been a little too good. And then Crucifix's Insight. Reveal the top 6 cards of your deck, put up to 3 enchantments among them from your hand, or among them into your hand and the rest in your graveyard. So basically, draw 3 for 3 mana. Because, you know, a large collection of your cards are artifacts in this deck.
Yep.
And then if you're not drawing 3, you're milling over Herald of the Pantheon, which is unfortunate, Sylvan Caryatid, which is fine because you probably have a mana, or lands, which you don't want to draw anyways at some point. So that's all fine. So this card just kind of hits the sweet spot for this deck. And then the sideboard, 3 Arbor Colossus. So apparently he had problems with Stormbreath Dragon. Yeah, since his only removal and blockers are white for Stormbreath. 3 Downfall, 2 Ajani Mentor of Heroes, 2 Elspeth Sludge Champion, an Ugin the Spirit Dragon, 2 Glare of Heresy, and then the sweet one, 2 Extinguish All Hope, destroy all non-enchantment creatures.
Now, this deck doesn't exactly ramp, but it's got a lot of life gain with the Herald of the Pantheon and the Corsair Crucifix that can get you to Ugin territory pretty quick.
So, Sylvan Caryatid is ramp. Ugin's just a one-off, so you're not, like, trying to ramp into Ugin, but it has ramp for, like, the rest of its plays, because...
Ugin, also with the Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, like, that the sideboard plan, you're not ramping into it aggressively. It's more like you're ramping your play's main board with these Herald of the Pantheons, so you're basically getting, you know, at some point, Soul Ring or something that affects you put 2 Heralds into play every turn for every spell. But the thing that I find most interesting is just boarding and Extinguish All Hope against, like, the control decks. Play a Starfield Onyx with 5 enchantments in play. Cast Extinguish All Hope. Attack them and kill them. Like, because it doesn't kill any of your enchantments, and then you get to attack them for whatever, 20 or something crazy.
Cool.
I think this guy missed out on the obvious play, Agent of Erebos in his sideboard to beat the Rally deck. But
yeah.
I think moving forward, that won't be something he overlooks.
Right on, yeah. So, like, and then the rest of the top 8, I mean, we've got 2 Bant Heroic deck in there, I don't know if you mentioned that, but Todd Anderson and Chris Meter are playing them.
Yeah,
so two, like, pretty good players.
Oh, yeah,
I think these decks are hard to pilot, these Heroic decks, and particularly the Bant one. If you've ever played the two, like, the Azorius Heroic deck has a lot more, like, just get in there, can't be blocked. What's the Aqueous Form? It's got
Aqueous form
in the main
Stratus Dance?
This one doesn't have that. This one's got more of, like, the, like, removal, and, like, it plays a little bit more, a little bit slower of a game, because it wants to splash for Dromoka's Command and, like, kind of interact more than the blue-white. And the blue-white's more like, draw the God Hand, like, play it out, and turn 3, you win the game. Which is way less consistent, but is hard for a lot of decks to deal with.
Yeah.
And obviously we've got 2 Bant Heroic decks now, and I think that tells us something about the power of that deck, especially with these two guys piloting that one. They chose this one over Abzan Control, even.
I think it's just, like, the ability to race. Like, you can just turn the corner and be a very aggressive deck. You can put a lot of pressure on decks like Abzan Rally just by, you know, playing a guy and then casting a spell targeting that guy. Just the old Defiant Strike, 3U. Untap, Jamoke's Command, fight your guy. You know, 5U, or 6U, because I put a counter on my guy and targeted it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're starting to just grow a creature that gets out of control, that if they don't draw there, you know, their removal spells, you're going to bury them, and they're not going to have a time to set up. So I think it's pretty good against, like, a lot of the setup decks in the format. And you still have power against the aggressive decks because you're playing Ordeal of Heliod, so.
And you either run in with one creature, or you get one of the 2 Monastery Mentors. Both these guys have Monastery Mentors, and you just go wide with those. Those guys can, like, get out of control way fast if they're not answered. And if your answers are used on the creatures that are, you know, being pumped, like the Favorite Hoplites on turn 1 and the Herald of Iros on turn 2, then, you know, you're taking a lot of those removal cards out of their hand before you can land that Monastery Mentor and get some good value out of him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. I think this deck is good. I hate playing this matchup, particularly the blue-white one, because it's just so uninteractive. It's like Boggles in Modern.
Yep. That's
but,
exactly what it reminds
definitely
me of.
Looks good. Four Dromoka's in main board.
Yeah, Dromoka's man, very, very good. Good against the Abzan Constellation deck they played against. Good against the Thopter Spy Network decks that are trying to do that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Daryl, you got any more?
I mean, there are two more decks in the top eight. But they didn't really pull my interest. They were just kind of, Abzan control, Sultai control. Seen it before, not really interested in talking about it.
Alright, cool. Well, I was surprised to see zero Hangerback Walkers in the top eight. Am I right about that?
So I have a feeling that Hangerback Walker missed the top eight on Breakers, because I think Jim Davis got 10th.
Yeah, with that blue back control deck. So
yeah,
Jim Davis's blue back control deck, let's go over that really quick, because that's pretty cool. He's got the four Hangerback Walkers as the only creatures, just like Jeff Hoogland's blue-white last week. And then he went up to three Thopter Spy Network, which seems a little crazy if you ask me.
Nope, but it's the best card. It's the best card in the deck.
You like it?
It's the best card in the deck.
All right, well, Jim Davis opts for Ashiok over Elspeth, which, you know, take your pick, pick your poison.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the black removal suite. So he's got Crux of Fate over the what is
and
the
hostilities.
White version? And Hostilities, yeah, and Languish, of course.
Languish, and then, like, yeah, just the ability to have more consistent removal and then instead of trying to hit their guy with, like, you know, hope they have a guy that you can Valorant Stance and a guy that you can Swift Reckoning and a guy that you can Last Breath and hope it's all good. And if, like, they're playing Abzan, that Last Breath does absolutely nothing, so you're just, like, holding this card for the rest of forever. Yeah. I like the black removal much better. Like, when I saw the blue-white version, I was like, there has to be a blue-black version of this playable, because I would just rather play Heroes Downfall and Crux of Fate and Languish than, like, all the crazy, weird removal of the new gold at the blind.
Right. And you've got access to Tassigar in the sideboard, too, which is pretty sweet.
Oh, wow. I like that. I'm a big fan.
Bioblights, Drown in Sorrow.
Not a big fan of Bioblight. Not a big fan of Bioblight. The double black seems hard in this deck.
Drown in Sorrow, though, I like that a lot. He's got, you know, he's got Urborg, he's got four Temple to Sea, he's got four Polluted Delta. He's got a lot of black.
Yeah,
in fact,
he does.
He's even running Evolving Wilds. But he's not, he did fix the, remember you were making fun of Jeff for the Darksteel Citadel Radiant Fountains
yes,
last
he
week?
Fixed.
He's got all
he
four
fixed
Darksteel.
The Darksteel Citadel problem. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. You did it. Congratulations. You figured it out.
But he's pretty heavy on Languish, so that means it kind of puts him into a position where he's got to, you know, have either the Hero's Downfall, or really he's got to counter the Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, that's
and
why.
He's got Clash of Wills, he's got Dissolve. But
I mean, that's why I would err towards more Crux of Fate, like two Crux of Fate, two Languish, like, and
yeah,
split it, or even 3-1 the other way. Like, Languish is really good. But I'm not a huge fan of having just one Crux of Fate and, like, no other wrath spell. Just like, did you play a guy that's bigger than 4-4? Crap. Huh? But yeah, I'm a huge fan of Thopter Spy Network. Like, if you've ever played with Bitter Blossom, this card's just Bitter Blossom that draws you cards. So,
yeah.
Like, he's more predicated on, like, trying to play out to the board early with Ashiok or just, like, established Thopter Spy Network on 4, and then just being, like, a tempo deck. Just counter everything you play and kill everything that gets in the way of Thopters and draw extra cards and just move on with your day. Like, so it's going to be, like, it's going to be much grindier than Jeff's deck, because Jeff's deck was grindy, but Jeff's deck just had a main board Ugin that could just go, Ugin, that's it.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, Elspeth, make 3 tokens, put you behind because you're losing to me drawing extra cards from Thopter Spy Network plus making tokens for Elspeth and threatening this ultimate that you can't beat because I don't have like 50 creatures on my board and you won't win. So this deck is like much grindier and is like leaning on Thopter Spy Network to provide it the ability to play a long game since it's still also playing 27 points.
Right. Alright, before we go on from the Star City Games Open, I just should mention that we mentioned Chromana Flare earlier in the cast here. It did come in at 23rd place, excuse me. John Sharp was running that one.
Any spicy Chromana Flare attack?
Yeah, there is. He's got 3 Evolutionary Leap in the main deck, which is pretty fun.
Alright, hold on.
And so he could hope to...
Hold on, I gotta look at this deck.
he could hope to leap into his career at the Flare. He's got 4 Flamelink Phoenix for the haste. Also can be reanimated with the Ferocious Kiss Cremantic Core and Soul Flare. Soul Flare, more importantly, is 4 power. He's got 4 Butcher of the Horde.
Alright, so that guy gives him flying, and that's it.
Yep, yep. 4 Seder Wayfinder, of course, 4 Soul Flare, 4 Sylvan Carrot, gives him Hexproof. Does not give him Defender.
Oh, it does give him Defender? I was gonna laugh. I'm gonna be like,
ha-ha! Chromanticore gives him Flying, First Strike, Vigilance, Trample, Lifelink, blah, blah, blah. And he can cast that, of course,
because he's got Bibblewax, Mana Confluence. What is this guy doing?
He's got Liliana, Heretical Healing. This deck seems all over the place, but... You know, it's kind of like just a side that he can do the whole Soul Flare Chromanticore shenanigans, and he also just has, like, good creatures in 5 colors.
I feel like he failed on the whole plane of God thing so that his guy was indestructible.
Funny thing, though, Daryl, he has no removal main deck.
Yeah, just like, nope, I'm going to beat with this blind ace hexproof first strike trample... Pro red, pro black, hexproof. I don't even know what all it'd be. Bang.
Right. His only non-creatures are Evolutionary Leap and Commune with Nature.
Commune with the gods, yeah. I mean, it's a different take on it. He did include the singleton god in the sideboard, but okay. I would say that I'm just a ginormous fan of the 2 torrent that elemental on the sideboard. That card gets 10 out of 10 in my book.
Right. Well, if you have, if you have hexproof, the only thing that's, like, alright, obviously Wrath is gonna cause problems, but he's got haste with Flamelink Phoenix, and I think that's better than indestructible in a lot of cases, because they don't have any sorcery speed answers to a hexproof beater.
That's fair.
Other than Crackling Doom, which you don't see a lot of.
Crackling Doom and Foul Tongue Invocation, both of which you're not seeing
a lot. Foul Tongue, is that an instant?
Yeah.
Okay, but that doesn't get your largest power creature, though. That can sack your Seder Wayfinder to that if you
want. Yeah, that's fair. Just another one that actually sees play. Just making mention of it.
Okay. Alright, and then plenty of other Abzan decks in there. The Target Goblins showed up a little bit.
Finally, we get some pile drivers, or did we just get a target?
Yeah, 4 of course.
Okay, but we actually
This is an interesting deck. I mean, they're all running Monastery Swift Spear when they play it. So we're running the 4 Monastery Swift Spear. Because there aren't enough good one-drop goblins, I guess. I mean, it's got 4 Frenzied in this one and 4 Foundry Street Denizen. I'm looking at the 27th place one.
Yeah.
3 Heal Cutters, 4 Pile Drivers, and 4 Swift Spear. Not a Goblin Rabblemaster to be seen.
Not even in the sideboard. Gee, what is this guy doing? Where is that Goblin Rabblemaster?
Well, it's an Atarka... Atarka's command build, and he doesn't want to be that slow.
I guess. I mean,
makes sense. I mean, I think you have to go all out in one direction, because the problem with the deck is that it commits to the board and then it gets blown out. And if you play that, then Drowning Sorrow just cleans up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in the market for Goblin Rabblemaster, but sure.
Yeah. Well, all right. So that's it for Star City Games Open.
Yeah, I've seen enough standard today. I'm not a standard hater anymore. I can get along. But I've seen enough standard cards, and I've discussed my beatings in Legacy enough, so I'm sick of that format, too.
Yeah. Well, before we move on from standard entirely, though, I do have a quick question for you, and maybe something to talk about a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
I was talking about my CDC Whip deck a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, actually probably about a month and a half ago, before Dromoka's Command became a really big deal with the green-white builds and the, just the Den Protector, Deathmist Raptor decks that were running that.
Yeah.
Also, I realized that Kolaghan's Command kills an artifact, and that's an artifact. So, my deck has 2 Whips in it, and this is my old list here. I've got 2 Den Protector, 4 Seder Wayfinder, 4 Caridids, 4 Coursers, 4 CDC, Brood Tyrant, excuse me. Yeah. 1 Tauren Elemental, 2 CDC Vizier, 1 Dragonlord Silumgar, 1 Silumgar Drifting Death, 1 Soul of Innistrad, 2 Tassi, and 1 Dragonlord Atarka. 2 Thoughtseize, 2 Heroes Downfall, 2 Whip, and 4 Cut. And then a bunch of lands.
Okay, so there's actually a card in your deck that I had to look at because I didn't know what it did.
What's that?
And then I looked at it and I was super impressed. And that's Soul of Innistrad. That card...
Okay, I should say this is my old list, Daryl, and I've actually cut Soul of Innistrad since then.
Don't make me sad. That card, like, seems amazing.
Yeah, it is really cool. No, it gives you a lot of recursion, and it's just it just seems win more whenever you've got it in your yard. Because if you've got your yard full of creatures, you're pretty much in good shape anyway.
I can see that being a sideboard card against, like, Abzan.
Right. And the problem is, too, that a 6-6 Death Touch is just not good enough. It has no evasion, it has no trample, so it doesn't get through. So that became, and, well, here are the updates I made to this one. I cut that. I cut the Dragonlord Silumgar. And I cut something else. I don't remember what it was. But I ended up putting in one Jace Vryn's Prodigy and one Liliana Heretical Healer to try him out. Mostly because of the shenanigans with the whip. And we talked about that last week. So I do need to follow up because I looked it up and I forgot to mention on the show. When you whip back a Jace, you can flip the card and then it remains in play. The exile, the replacement effect does not cause the Planeswalker to disappear.
So Jace and Liliana are actually different. Does Jace blink itself, or does it just flip?
They both do the same thing. They both exile and then come into play on their own.
Okay, so they blink. Okay.
Yeah.
Because if they don't blink, then they wouldn't do that. That's where I was getting confused. Yeah.
So the thing is, both of them can be, you know, can be done with the whip. Jace can be done instant speed. Obviously, you flip it. You know, you get your Planeswalker when you reanimate it. But it's both of them are good because they actually they perpetuate the engine that's going on in the deck to begin with. Because
absolutely,
the discard blows your yard with the creatures you can't play. I mentioned last week that in my experience at the standard winner box I played, I had to cast a Dragonlord Atarka. I didn't have the red mana, but I had a whip in play, so I got to pitch him with the Jace, and then I got to reanimate him with my whip, which was pretty sweet.
That's pretty good.
And ended up with a flip Jace on top of that.
So
then, as an alternative, if we're concerned about the whips getting blown out by Dromoka's Command, by Kolaghan's Command, we need to have a backup plan. I think this deck plays the late game really well, and it just has a lot of powerful creatures if you can last long enough.
Yep.
To dig out with Sidisi, Undead Vizier, to recur with Den Protectors. And then now also to recur with Liliana. So
where are we going? Where are you taking me?
Here's where I'm going, Daryl. I think there are a lot of haters on this deck, and no one's playing it right now. But I think that if you just understand that the whip of Erebos is not your only win condition, it's not your only plan for this deck, I think you can play this efficiently, and I think this can be good. I think it takes some skill, it takes some preparation. You've got to really know your matchups. You got to know your deck well to know what to dig out. But this is a toolbox deck.
Yep.
So what would you suggest? I mean, how can we make this better? What can we get from Origins that we can run in this one? I talked about the two Planeswalkers, obviously, but is there anything else that you can think of that really makes this
Are you ever in the market for the other Planeswalker, for Nissa?
So that's an option. Is Nissa good enough?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
So the second thing I immediately thought of was Woodland Bellower.
Yeah.
But that card doesn't do anything.
Well, what does it do?
Fetches a 3-mana non-legendary, so you get a Courser or a Wayfinder or a carry added.
Yeah, I don't think that's good enough.
No, not at all.
Nissa you can activate right away with the whip. It can get you a land to ramp, which is important in this deck.
Yeah.
But it can also shuffle your deck, which is good because of all the Courser shenanigans, right? And then the Sidisi shenanigans.
So there's a lot of deck manipulation. I gotta actually look at the spoiler here for a minute, so I'm gonna mute myself to go to or to gather real quick. But continue talking, and I will listen.
So Nissa flips when you get your 7th land in play, and it has 3 loyalty counters when it does. +1 is real, the top card of your library if it's a land, put onto the battlefield, otherwise put into your hand. So obviously really good with Courser, right? You can get, you know, a land off the top of your deck, and then, you know, play another one behind it, gain 2 life. But it also puts in a 4/4 elemental creature that's legendary that can block for it.
Yeah, that ability didn't seem super relevant.
It doesn't, because in the late game, it's not going to do you any good. It's going to protect your Nissa is what it's going to do. And it's a -2, which is the bummer, on a 3 loyalty Planeswalker. I don't think Nissa's as good as people are giving credit for.
As we want it to be?
Yeah.
I'm just going to peruse the Magic Origins here and see if there's anything worth being excited about.
Yeah.
I just can't think of anything that, like, I mean, you don't want to play Clash of Wills to try and show up your early game.
Right.
Which was, like, the first thing I thought of.
Well, that's the sideboard plan, is you go into the counter spells, you go into, I know I lost it. I've got, negates, just Disdainful Strokes in the sideboard.
Yeah, you don't need anything else. I mean, you could add like a Fletchback Marauder or two.
Yeah.
If you want a little, if you want a little removal.
Something I thought about was Evolutionary Leap.
Maybe that's not a bad one.
But it's tight though. You want to run as many creatures as you can.
Yeah, like you have to. There's like the menacing elf that you could play.
The menacing elf. What is that?
I can't remember the name of it. It's like a. No, it's a 5-mana, 3 black, like a 4/3 with menace. And it kills a non-elf when it comes into play.
Oh, right. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. The, yeah.
That's good. There's also a 5-mana one that puts in a 5/5 flyer token, and it's a 2/2 itself. And it does you damage every turn. So it's kind of costly, and it doesn't do a whole lot for you, but to have a 5/5 flyer, that outclasses a lot of the flyers right now.
Yeah. I mean, the like removal spell guy might be reasonable, but I don't think anything else is really that exciting.
And then I got one more for you to consider here, and that is the... Greyblade Marauder. We talked about that guy before. You know what that does?
It's the Death Touch, but I don't remember what else he does.
1/4 Death Touch for 3, 2 and a black it is. And yeah. When he deals combat damage to a player, they lose life equal to the number of creature cards in your yard. So on average, that's like 5 or 6, which is pretty good. If he can
I mean, that's there. Not disappointing. I'll say that sounds really good in that deck specifically, but...
And so the plus side of that is it's basically like a late game threat that can be useful in the like early to mid game because you can get a decent blocker out of it.
Sure.
So something to consider. I'd like to try a couple of different things and sort of bring him back and talk about him a little bit. But there was a conversation on Reddit and people are pretty much hating on the deck, and I wanna show the world it's ready. It's time.
I don't know if it's time, but I mean, it's completely playable. I think you just have
it's to time, Daryl, believe me.
You just have to pick the direction you want to go with it, I think. Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, so you're kind of a naysayer yourself, aren't you? I get your tone, Daryl.
I'm not actually a naysayer. I really like the deck. I don't know enough to be 100% honest with you. I just don't have enough of a background on cards and standard that to be able to go, yeah, that's the card this deck needs.
Okay. Well, it's a deck I'm comfortable playing. I've been playing for a while, and I started to build Abzan Control. I was like trading for the Nissas, and I was like kind of sad to be like dropping like 25 Puka credits, Puka dollars on that. And so I was like, I'm just gonna try to jam Sultai until it happens. And I think I've got a pretty good list, so I'll put that in the notes.
Like, honestly, the first thing I think of when I just look at this deck is, like, why not play 4-color Sultai Splashing Siege right now?
Yeah,
that was just, like, the first thing I thought of, like, why not Splash Siege right now?
Because I want to go bigger, Daryl.
No, that's fine. Bigger. Siege right now is the beginning of big, is the way I look at it.
The beginning of big. Big, yeah. Big. All right, and I've got just a couple more things here. There is a Battle for Zendikar spoiler. I don't know if you've seen that, but they spoiled Oblivion Sour, and I'm happy to see that this is an Eldrazi spell that has no Annihilator. I think they're phasing it out. Annihilator is not fun.
They said they were getting rid of that. Mauro said that they weren't going to bring it back. Like, it's not good.
I think it's a good card, and it sticks with you have to cast it to do it.
Oh, sorry. I was talking about Annihilator just being not good.
Oh yeah, no, it's not good. I mean, I think this is a good card, despite not having
Annihilator. Because I read it once, and I just don't remember what it is.
All right, well, why don't you read it out loud, Daryl?
Hold on, I have to open it first.
Oh man,
I know I'm the worst. All right, Oblivion Sower, 6-mana creature, Eldrazi, 5/8. When you cast Oblivion Sower, target opponent exiles the top 4 cards of his or her library. Then you may put any number of land cards that player owns from exile onto the battlefield under your control. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's good. It's cool. Like, it has a really neat feel to it. Like, that feels mythic. Like, he just makes crap disappear and then, like... I don't know. It just feels really cool to when I read the card and, like, saw it, the picture. All that scene feels really good. Mm-hmm. My first initial judgment of this is, holy crap, this card's going to be insane in EDH.
Yeah, it is.
Because you could just, like, play Rest in Peace and, like, watch your opponents, like, discard lands and just go Oblivion Sword, mill 4, take, like, 10 lands and put them in a play under my control. And also worth noting that if they delve their lands away, you play Oblivion Sword in Standard. You take their lands that they delved away. So if you, like, are overlapping colors with your opponent, you can take their lands and then fetch your lands out of your deck. So it's like a mana ramp spell. So,
And then it's just got
like, a big body, which is fine. Like, its 8 toughness is impossible to kill. It's not going to clock your opponent super fast, but it's going to ramp you even more once you've gotten to 6. Which feels awkward, but I'm assuming since we're going back to Zendikar, you're going to see they've already spoiled Avengers coming back. Shocking. So, I mean, you're going to put a bunch of lands to play for your, you know, your plant tokens. You're going to make more plant tokens. And then, like, if you follow it up with another Oblivion Sword and mill some lands off of that, you're going to pull up your plants. And then you're going to kill your opponent. So, I mean, if and only if Avengers Zendikar is coming back, then, you know, I feel like they're going to push that. The one big archetype that was one of the archetypes in Rise, which was Eldrazi Green. I don't know if you played Standard during that time.
Yeah.
Just like Primeval Titan, getting Eldrazi Temples, playing the big idiots, and Avengers, and Zendikar, and stuff like that. And just blowing them up with those cards. So, like, you could see the return of, like, Avenger and just gigantic creatures, and then just a big green ramp deck that's not focused on putting, like, the mana dorks in the play and ramping, but, like, you'd see it, like, so if you see, like, a 2-mana ramp spell come out of Battle for Zendikar, or they bring back Explore, you'll see, you know, go into 4, Explosive Vegetation to 6, Oblivion Sword to 7 or 8, you know, Avengers Zendikar, you'll see, like, this green stable of, like, actual ramp decks build again.
Right. You know what? So, I have to say it. When you read this and you immediately noticed that you can get anything that's been exiled when it comes into play, I was like, I felt kind of stupid because I totally missed that part. It's not just the initial like exile, the top 4 where you can take lands from. It's from the opponent's exile, right?
Yeah.
So
if you have been Ashiokking them, you can take their lands. If they've been delving, if you play Rest in Peace, there are like a lot of cool applications in EDH. In Standard, not so much right now, except for delve, but...
Hey, Daryl, what's the... Okay, so remember the nightmares that they had in Torment that would come into play and exile, like, all of one thing in the, until they left play? Is there a nightmare that exiles all the lands? There is, right?
There isn't a nightmare
it's that not does world, it. World Gorge of Brain, is it?
There's not a nightmare that does it, but there's a beast that does it. So,
Realm Razor.
Realm Razor,
yeah. There we go.
6 mana, Realm Razor them. So if you have 12 mana... You can exile all the lands and take their lands.
Not a good combo, but hey, Tooth and Nail?
Okay.
Tooth and Nail, Realm Razor?
Oblivion Sower?
Yeah, that sounds sweet, doesn't it?
11 power and your opponent never gets lands again? That seems pretty solid. I mean, like, 11 power, one-sided Armageddon seems pretty good. In Modern, it's not great because they're just much better... Like, much, much better targets. Like, you just go get Iona and Hater Servant, and they can never play another spell. But I like where your head's at. That's kind of cool.
I just thought there was something cheaper that did that. Apparently not.
That puts 2 creatures into play? See the Unwritten?
See the Unwritten. Yep, there you go.
There you go. But, I mean, that's just, I like that synergy, but I don't think we're going anywhere with it.
Ah, shoot. Well, there's the deck.
Yep.
That's the end of it, too. All right, well, that's the thing. I think it's pretty cool. To be honest, it doesn't feel mythic to me. It feels rare, if anything.
It feels mythic, like the if you look at the picture and the text and what it does, and like see, they're trying to put a story together with that card. So it feels like they did it.
Right. I think being the first card that they spoiled in this set, they're suggesting that there's going to be something much bigger than 6 mana that you're going to want to ramp into, which is just how Zendikar is, right?
Yep, that's how it was the first time at least.
All right, so that's that. And then the last thing is we did a little bit of a little contest. And remember, I don't know if you even remember, Daryl, we talked about this briefly last week. We talked about a red, mono-red devotion deck in Modern.
Yeah, I
threw it up on Reddit, and we got a couple of results back. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to post them in the show notes. But I did say I was going to order four times Fnatic of Mogus, foil Fnatic of Mogus for the winner. And so that is Shogun Fish. So if you're listening, you'll have to send your address and stuff to our email address, and I'll send that to you. So the email address, again, is cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com. But lots of cool things. Almost every list had Boggart Ram Gang in it. Some of them ran War Elemental, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's because the Ram Gang is the man.
Yeah. War Elemental is a red creature that is a 1-1. And you have to sack it unless the opponent was dealt damage when you play it. And whenever an opponent is dealt damage, you put a +1/+1 counter on it for each damage dealt.
Okay, so, I was going to ask you why Shogun Fish won. Because I read, like, the first, you know, like, 12 cards of his deck. I'm like, yeah, that's just what's in this deck.
Yeah.
And then I saw 4x Evolutionary Leap, 2x Porphyros, 4x Reality Ancestors,
yeah.
4x Volcano Hellion. I'm like, all right, I can get behind that. That seems kind of sweet.
And I posted my list up there, too. And basically, since it's mono red, I said, why not be Skred? And if you're going to be running Boros Reckoners because it's red, 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 Skred seems good. That's a lot of rhymes.
Why are there no Blood Moons in any of these decks?
Blood Moon in the sideboard. Oh, actually, I think I forgot to do that.
No,
I didn't
do
that.
You put Fulminator Mage.
You know what? Because, Daryl, because you don't want to lock. You want to just win very fast, and that's what they do.
Get out of here. Blood Moon, them.
Yeah. Well, Fiery Bombardment. Have you ever heard of that one?
No.
Okay, Fiery Bombardment is pretty sweet. Let me pull it up here. It's an enchantment, and I only ran two enchantments in this deck, and they're both these. And it's one in a red for an enchantment. It says, Chroma, 2, sack a creature. It deals damage to target creature or player equal to the number of red mana symbols in that creature's cost. So that's Old Devotion, Chroma.
That's
so when you're done using your creatures, when you beat in with your Boggart Ram Gang, you pay 2, and you deal 3 more to them.
That's not bad.
Finish them off. So it's pretty sweet in there.
Alright, I still think this is... So Shogun Fish wins for not having Blood Moon in my heart because he wanted to do something crazy. But you and the other guy, the F-minuses for no mainboard Blood Moons and all mountains deck.
You can't afford mainboard Blood Moon. This is balls to walls aggro, burn face.
F-minus for both of you.
Alright, Daryl. You know what? I ran this deck. It's pretty good. It's pretty strong. I won every game I played with it, and that was like 3.
I know. F-minus for both of you. Play Blood Moon.
All right. Well, anyways, there it is. I'll post the link to the whole Reddit conversation on there.
Nice.
And that is all. That's all we got.
That's all I got. We've been droning on for like an hour anyways.
We spent a good deal of time talking about the shittiest cards ever made.
We did. Unfortunately, we did.
Oh, so Ryan did get back to me. He said he got tied up at work, and he's there till 11 o'clock, so he's not going to make it. But we never talked about Ryan's deck last week, which is the Green-White Hate Bears. He played in Chicago last weekend, and he got 14th in the Modern IQ.
Yeah.
And so he's the one running the Vryn Wingmare in the main deck. And so it's a pretty cool Hate Bears deck. He's got 4 Vials and Eclectic Company in there, and 4 Path. And so we were kind of talking about the balance between those two in our conversation a little bit. And basically, he sort of was thinking that Collective Company was good, too, and maybe wanted to go up a little higher on that, I believe. I don't know, maybe I'm making that conversation up, but I thought that.
I'm just a fan of the Mungar and Coral Doors.
Yeah, so Ryan was going to talk about this deck, and he didn't show up because work is more important to him. But we'll just go quick and say that it's got some Aven Mind Sensors, some Blade Splicers, some Flicker Wisp, some Arbiters, of course, Noble Hierarch, Cassali Pride Mage, Resto Angel, Scavenging Ooze, 1 Vryn Wingmare, which is the MTG Origins, like Thalia, the 3-mana Thalia.
Glow Rider, get it right.
Yeah, okay, but it's got flying.
It's Glow Rider with flying.
All right, and then he's got 3 Thalia. And so, cool deck, lots of fun lands that do stuff. We'll put that list on there, too. And hopefully Ryan will get back to us soon and talk about that one. But he does have the Hallowed Moonlight in the sideboard. We were talking about that earlier, too.
Oh, Hallowed Moonlight, yeah. I think it's all you can afford. And, like, you're trying to be techie, one-off sideboard. Yep. Seems fine.
Cool. So there's Ryan's deck. And that's all we got this week.
Thank God.
Non-magic, we already talked about your car crash and your ticket.
Yeah, we talked about how atrocious my life was. It took my insurance company 4 days to call me.
Oh, those jerks.
Yeah, so
I'm still waiting on them to try and pick up my car, which is going to suck. But, no, other than that, nothing.
That's not too exciting. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna be a fat kid for a minute and talk about the most awesome meal I had on the trip.
Okay.
So I went to this tiny little hole-in-the-wall restaurant called Rick's Cheesesteak.
Yeah.
And their advertisement is, why go to Philly when you can go to Rick's? And I was like, that can't be true. Because Philly's like 3 hours away. This place is like 3 hours away. I'm like, yeah. I could probably get a better cheesesteak in Philly. I was really impressed by the cheesesteak. I got a cheesesteak that was probably like 6 inches thick, full of like cheesesteak and capricorn ham, and like it was A+, very good food. Would suggest, but I'm a huge fan of cheesesteaks, so they won my vote on the day.
That sounds really good. They probably don't deliver to Milwaukee, unfortunately.
They certainly don't deliver to Baltimore, so I doubt you're going to get a delivery that far.
Oh,
what about you, man? I know that I talked about it. I touched on it. You got married this past weekend.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend. So we took a little trip out to Illinois and had some fun out there on Monday and Tuesday. But now I'm back, and I was at work today, and it was really sad to return to that. But school's coming up soon, so I'm gonna have some marching band activity going on in August, and
super busy.
It's gonna get a little busy, but I mean, it's mostly just on Mondays, so. I'll have some time before school starts to you know, do some fun stuff. But once September hits, it's busy as heck because we got homecoming and parades and stuff coming up. So we got to get the old marching band back in action.
The two amigos will soldier on.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all for us. And Daryl, would you like to try to remember the URL and Twitter stuff?
No,
I think that's fun.
The Twitter is card_knock_life. URL is cardknocklifepodcast.com. You can find us on MTGcast. Are we anywhere else? Are we on Stitcher or the SoundCloud or anything like that? Or are we just on MTGcast?
I don't know. I think we're not. I think
we're just
not.
On MTGcast. MTGcast and our website. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Well done.
Thank you.
All right. See you later.
Have a good one.
You more than life itself. Into my knees, and I beg the Lord, please let me be a good daddy. All he needs, love, knowledge, discipline too. I pledge my life to you. Trust the truth.